Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, April 16th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Governor Otter stops short of calling for a special session, but says the issue of child support enforcement must be fixed. Grand jury indicts Washington State Auditor Troy Kelly. Governor Inslee calls for his resignation, and two baseball all-stars visit Moscow and talk about race relations in Major League Baseball in the years following Jackie Robinson breaking the color line. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter told reporters today the 2015 legislative session is incomplete, but he's not ready yet to call a special session. Otter was referring to the House Judiciary Committee's vote last Friday to kill a bill adopting federal standards for child support payment enforcement. The state could lose $46 million in direct federal money and up to $200 million in child support payments to Idaho parents. The federal government has given Idaho 60 days to implement the enforcement policies or lose the federal dollars. Of the $46 million in federal dollars at risk, $30 million pays for temporary assistance to needy families. The Spokesman Review website reports Health and Welfare Director Dick Armstrong said at the governor's press conference, "We are greatly concerned at the unintended consequences of this action and certainly look to the governor and the legislature to help us find an answer, find a cure so that we can go back to doing the business of supporting families in Idaho." Otter has told Armstrong to send a letter to the 155,000 families that receive child support payments in Idaho explaining how they could be impacted by the legislature's failure to pass the bill. Otter said, "I'm not prepared to stand up here today and tell you I'm going to call a special session because I think there's a lot of homework to do in that if we were to have a special session, that we have a successful one." Idaho Health and Welfare spokesperson Tom Shanahan said invoicing and enforcement of all non-voluntary child support payments could end if the state does not solve the problem in 2 months. The non-voluntary payments amount to $174 million annually. Also today, Governor Otter used a line item veto to cut $3 million that lawmakers had dedicated to industry sector grants for workforce development. Otter had asked for $5 million for the program from state general funds, but the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee had authorized the use of workers' compensation fund money for the grants. That prompted the veto. Otter said there is no logical or policy nexus between the industry sector grants and the workers' compensation fund. He said such a precedent is unwise and could lead to an increase in the rates that employers pay for workers' compensation insurance. Otter also signed a bill today lowering the tax rate employers pay for workers' compensation. He also signed a bill creating an additional liquor license for conference centers larger than 4,000 square feet in any resort city. Lawmakers passed the law to allow a conference center in Ketchum to get a liquor license. A federal grand jury in Seattle today issued a 10-count indictment against Washington auditor Troy Kelly for participating in what the jury says is a fraudulent scheme involving two title companies. Kelly, a Democrat, was elected to the statewide position in 2012. Governor Jay Inslee has called for Kelly to step down. The Spokesman Review website reports House Democratic Leader Pat Sullivan of Covington and Senate Democratic Leader Sharon Nelson of Maury Island called on Kelly to resign today. Democratic State Treasurer Jim McIntyre said Kelly, quote, cannot continue in his role as auditor and should resign immediately. Kelly said he will take a temporary leave of absence starting May 1st. He said in a statement, "I believe this indictment has no merit and want to note that none of the allegations touch on my work as an elected official in any way. I fully intend to resume my duties after I put these legal matters to rest." The indictment says Kelly moved money between accounts at two title companies in which he was a principal, trying to conceal reconveyance fees paid by borrowers. The grand jury says the money ended up in a shell company owned by Kelly. The borrowers sued the title companies in 2008, and borrowers from one of the companies, Old Republic, sued Kelly in 2009. The indictment says Kelly lied on five separate occasions in sworn depositions for the lawsuit. Democrats and Republicans in the Washington legislature both revealed education funding plans yesterday, with Democrats proposing a capital gains tax to raise $1.3 billion for education over the next biennium. The new tax would impact those that get more than $250,000 a year from their investments, or about 7,500 residents. The Democratic plan includes a new system for school salaries to be phased in over 6 years and also phases in lower class sizes and more teachers. Democratic Senator Jim Hargrove of Hoquiam said his party's plan would give 98% of residents a property tax break because local school levies would be reduced by the amount each district gets from the state. The Republicans also hope to raise revenue to bring schools in compliance with the Washington Supreme Court's decision in the McCleary case, which found the legislature has been violating the state constitution by failing to fully fund K-12 education in the state. The Republican plan would increase the amount of money the state collects from the property tax levy system and decrease the amount local school districts collect. That plan would take pressure off school districts to fund education using local taxpayer money. Their plan would also eliminate annual cost of living adjustments for teachers and some school staff previously approved by a statewide voter initiative. Lawmakers will race to come up with a bipartisan plan by the scheduled end of the legislative session 10 days from now. The Washington House Tuesday tightened safety rules in the Senate's oil train safety bill and then passed it 58-40. The House version of the bill increases the barrel tax for oil transport by rail by 8 cents, double the increase in the Senate bill. The bill also increased public disclosure requirements that had been in the Senate bill, but not so much that the public would have real-time information about imminent oil trains traveling through communities. The move to regulate oil train safety on a state level comes after several Bakken crude oil train explosions this year, as well as one in 2013 that killed 47 people in Quebec. Crude oil shipments through Washington continue to increase as oil companies operating in the North Dakota Bakken oil fields seek to move the crude to refineries and ports on the West Coast. All of those westbound train routes converge through Sandpoint and downtown Spokane. The House bill, as amended, requires rail shippers to notify the Department of Ecology about their oil cargoes up to a week in advance. It also requires shippers to release aggregate reports of recent shipments to the public every 3 months. The aggregate reports would include information about the type, volume, and routes used by trains carrying oil. The House removed a requirement that would require 3 crew members on oil trains. Federal law requires 2 crew members. The Democratic-backed bill also requires pipeline operators to pay the barrel tax and release information to the state government, including the types of solvents in the pipelines that are used to thin Canadian tar sands crude oil. Those pipeline rules are likely to face resistance when the Republican-dominated Senate takes up the House's amended bill. The Mirror News Service quotes Republican Representative Matt Shea of Spokane Valley saying lawmakers should focus on rail because pipelines already have safety protocols in place. Ninth District Republicans Susan Fagan of Pullman and Joe Schmick of Colfax voted no on the House bill, which passed Tuesday. The University of Idaho announced researchers at the school have received a $10.6 million grant for biomedical research. The award from the National Institutes of Health's Phase 1 of the newly opened Institutional Development Award in the Center of Biomedical Research Excellence Program will give monetary support to the university's new Center for Modeling Complex Problems. The center will house postdoctoral researchers who are working on the center's projects and also will give an opportunity to other faculty, staff, and student researchers in any field to meet, share, and discuss ideas. UI Distinguished Professor of Biological Sciences Holly Wickman told the Daily News the intent is to create an idea incubator that would allow research scientists, modelers, and others to collaborate on their research. Wickman said this is really the formal beginning of something really exciting. The center on the third floor of the Mines building will be called the Collaboratorium for Modeling Complex Problems. Wickman said there will not be single researchers sitting alone at a computer console, but rather a place they can work together on issues and solutions which cannot be found by working alone. Wickman said the center will focus on questions around worldwide issues in biomedics through, quote, mathematical, statistical, and molecular models. A Potlatch man is facing three felony charges for possessing and dealing child pornography. Police served papers on 51-year-old former Washington State University employee Michael Martin Stevens yesterday. The indictment from an investigation last June listed one count of second-degree dealing in depictions of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct and three counts of second-degree possession of depictions of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct. All charges are Class C felonies. According to the Daily News, Moscow Police Detective William Shield led the investigation. Shield, in his report, wrote he discovered an IP address through the BitTorrent computer software systems that was operating. The program had located a file that may be of investigative interest in a four-minute child porn video that showed a five-year-old girl posing in sexual positions with a male subject. Shield found an IP address through the American Registry for Internet Numbers, which showed the video was on a WSU computer that belonged to Stevens at the Housing and Dining Services office in Street Perham Hall. Whitman County Senior Deputy Prosecutor Daniel LeBeau issued the summons for Shields to appear in court Monday, April 24th at 10 a.m. Latah County is standing by its decision not to wait for a state decision to allow county clerks across the state to perform same-sex marriages based on a February U.S. Supreme Court decision. Six same-sex couples married in the Latah County Courthouse last October had their marriages put on hold in February when the State Department of Health and Welfare announced it would not recognize the marriage licenses issued by the county. Jeff Dodge and Mark McLaughlin, who were wed in October, say they want to be a normal couple and adopt a son and file their income taxes. Kathy Sprague and longtime partner Tabitha Simmons told the Daily News their marriage license application is also on hold until the matter is resolved. Sprague called the February announcement an act of malice because it came 4 months after the couple made their application. Sprague said the state should have acted sooner. Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson said his staff turned up evidence of the validity of the licenses. Thompson said, to date, we have been unable to locate any legal authority that would allow the Bureau of Vital Statistics to second-guess your and the other marriage licenses issued on October 10, 2014. Thompson said in a March letter to the six couples, the information his staff discovered led his department to the conclusion that, quote, not only are the questioned marriages valid, but also that the records of the Latah County Clerk Recorder are presumptive legal proof of such marriages. We continue to be perplexed with the position taken by the state bureaucracy that Idaho's former prohibition on same-sex marriage, which had been declared unconstitutional by the federal courts of our country, forms a legitimate basis to question the validity of your marriage. We are sorry that their actions have left you with any degree of uncertainty. Two Major League Baseball All-Stars discussed racial and religious adversity in the face of the Ku Klux Klan and other racist attitudes in the game during the 1950s in a University of Idaho School of Journalism and Mass Media panel at the 1912 Center in Moscow last night. All-Star pitcher James Mudcat Grant, who in 1961 was the first black pitcher to win more than 20 games in a season, said his time growing up in La Cuchi, Florida was difficult, especially when the KKK arrived in his town.
The Ku Klux Klan used to drive through La Cuchi every other Thursday night. And what they would do, you couldn't turn the lights out in the house when they would come through, because they knew that if you turn the lights out, they of course knew that we knew that they were coming. And what they would do is that they would shoot through the homes for I would say maybe about 15 or 20 rounds or something like that. And of course, we had a type of trap door where Mom would put us underneath the house. But the confidence that we needed was given to us from the church. And we, for some reason, I don't know, we always thought the fact that we were protected from a religious standpoint gave us confidence then, and not so much of a fear circumstance.
That was All-Star pitcher James Mudcat Grant. Grant said 10 years after Jackie Robinson broke the color line in Major League Baseball in 1947, things were worse for him because Robinson had to be protected. He said while traveling with the Cleveland Indians in 1958, he couldn't stay in the same hotels as his teammates or take the same cabs or even stay in the state of Missouri. Pittsburgh Pirates Cy Young Award winner Vern Law, who grew up in Meridian, Idaho, spoke of how he witnessed Jackie Robinson being pressured during his first years in the majors. Law said he saw Robinson being harassed after making plays on the field.
I saw a guy sliding into second. I saw him sliding into second base. I saw the guy covering second base spit on him and then call him everything in the book. And he stood there or laid there and took it. And to have somebody do that and abuse him in such a way that is just, you know, it's beyond imagination in your own mind unless you're there to see it. You could probably feel a lot like I did when I saw that, because with my background and everything and living in an area where things like that just didn't happen, you don't treat people like that, it just hurts your heart.
That was Cy Young Award-winning pitcher Vern Law, who currently lives in Ogden, Utah. Wednesday marks the 68th anniversary of Jackie Robinson's first Major League Baseball appearance. Robinson became the first player to be integrated when he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Another panelist, University of Southern California's Institute of Sports Media and Society Director Dan Durbin, said he is currently building a digital library on African American players who played in the majors in the 25 years after Robinson broke the color barrier. KRFP intern Luis Torres contributed this story. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Mostly clear conditions through Tuesday of next week, except partly cloudy on Friday night. Low 32 tonight, 69 for the high tomorrow, 38 the low Friday night, 62 for the high Saturday and Sunday. The highs will be around 69 Monday and Tuesday. Lows around 37 Saturday and Sunday night and around 40 Monday night. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 58 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Music follows after that. Stay tuned for more. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach and Luis Torres assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial.